For years, my boss, Dr. Amit Roy, has been asking me, here's all these numbers, we see them, and if you divide them, is there's this much phosphate rock left? And I say, well, that's what the numbers say. And he says, well, is it really true? And I say, well, I'll have to do a lot of work to figure that out, and I'll have to go through country by country, and how long will that take? And I kept telling him, well, it'll take about a year probably. And he said, okay, one day, he said, you have 9 months to do this. So what this is a preliminary estimate, and what I did was I did a desk study. I did interview a bunch of people. I interviewed a lot of consultants I know in the business, but I tried to maintain a pretty low key and use whatever information I could find. A lot of studies, numerous articles on the internet here and there suggest phosphorus, which will equate with phosphate rock. Reserves will be depleted in this century. And this is just a list of names, articles. There's been more articles. They're almost too numerous to mention at this time. But this all didn't start in the last 5 or 6 years. It started long ago, and perhaps even in the 20s. But the last great Institute of Ecology study was in 1971. They had a symposium, and at that symposium they concluded the phosphate rock reserves of the world would be exhausted in 90 to 130 years. This is the infamous or famous peak phosphorus curve from Cordell, Draggart, and White from 2009, and this is the actual heading on the figure, indicative peak phosphorus curve, illustrating that in a similar way to oil, global phosphorus reserves are likely to peak, after which production will be significantly reduced. And I don't know how they're trying to cite this, but Mr. Jasinski at the USGS does not give out these kind of numbers, at least he's not supposed to. I know where he gets them, and the European Fertilizer Manufacturers Association doesn't give out these kind of numbers where they can calculate phosphorus production. There's been several varieties of this curve, and the points have migrated all around, but the apex of the curve has not seemed to change at 2033, 2034. This is a Hubbert peak curve, first devised by King Hubbert back in about 1955 to explain how oil production would peak in the United States. And basically what it is when half of the reserve is gone, you go over the top, and then production decline. His original curves were parabolas. This one appears to be a normal curve. Many, if not all, recent articles depend on USGS data for phosphate rock reserve and resource estimates, and in fact, in many years, I have used USGS phosphate rock reserve and resource estimates. And what's happened, particularly over the last 5, 6, 7 years, anybody who published this kind of data seemed to go out of the business, and they're probably about the last source, and they were straddled with being the last source, maybe you could say, of phosphate rock data. There's phosphate rock deposits all over the world. The only continent I know of that there aren't phosphate rock deposits is Antarctica. Some continents are more endowed with phosphate rock deposits than others, and some countries are, as we will see. Two major types, sedimentary deposits, are primarily composed of a carbonate apatite. They can range from about 32% P2O5 to about 42% igneous. Fire-formed deposits, they have different kinds of apatite. The most common is a fluorapatite. Apatite is from Apate, the Greek goddess of deceit and guile, fraud and deception, and she was released from Pandora's box, which I always thought was interesting. Apatite looks like many different things. It's in the hexagonal system. The crystal on the upper left I picked up at Epawala in Sri Lanka. On the upper right, that's a DeLong rib, ancestral manatee I picked up down in Florida. It's a nodule of phosphate, almost pure, from Tahua in Niger. Shark's teeth, phosphate. On the left are the dark or phosphatized algal stromatolites from India. On the right, far side, those pebbles are from Morocco, from the top of the formation. And then the sandy stuff in the dish is what most phosphate rock concentrate looks like. That's from Florida. After about the Second World War, as it's called, phosphate production really took off, and into the 60s, phosphoric acid technology really started getting developed back in the late 30s. And the war put a little damper on it, but it just kept going up. The first part of the curve there you see up to the 60s is people learning how to make TSP, and then after that, in the mid-60s up to the 70s, all of a sudden they learned how to make ammonium phosphates, and the curve almost got exponential. And then what happened, there's a UNIDO report, 1976, and they decided at that time everything was rising so meteorically, world phosphate rock production would be on the order of 300 million tons per year by the year 2000. But it didn't happen that way. About in 1988, 1989, production peaked at about 160 million tons, and then in 2008, it went over 160 million tons again. And this is the other part of the whole curve. What we see here is production from the United States declining, Morocco slowly going up, China going up. And what happened was back in the late 80s and early 90s, when the Soviet Union broke apart, a lot of internal demand was gone and production really lowered. We see the other countries too are taking a much, much larger chunk of the production, or making them a lot larger chunk of the production. Where does the rock go? 72% to 74% goes to phosphoric acid, 12% still goes to SSP, 2% goes to TSP, and that excludes the P2O5 from the acid, 14% goes to other uses. Mr. Prudhomme at IFA says 82% goes to fertilizer. Where does all the acid go? Well, globally, half of all fertilizer applications are DAP, MAP, or TSP. And IFA estimates that in the next 5 years, there's going to be 40 new DAPMAP and TSP units in 10 countries. Based on the last 5 years, Mr. Andy Young, who's a CRU consultant, says that there's going to be a combined annual growth rate of 3.2%. This is the same data again I plotted with that nice flat curve, and you can look there and you can see the statistics and what the R squared value says is that line explains about 2.5% of the data there. So the line is absolutely no good to explain the data. But what I'm telling you is the last 28 years growth has been less than 1% a year in the phosphate business. That there's all kinds of trends you can see here, up and down and up and down. The one about 1990, that's where the Soviet Union disseminated. If you look at the data down below, you see the slow decline of the United States production. You see Morocco slowly rising. The thing that's really pretty much meteoric, you know, as far as the rise, is China. Vast increases in production to supply internal demand. One of the things that's really affecting world production is the current projected U.S. mine production capacity. And this is put together by Mr. Jasinski at the USGS. And all of this is based on permitting in Florida, basically. There's lands down in Florida, there's more phosphate lands, and they have so much land permitted, they keep so far ahead of the game. We'll see that in another slide here in a second. Has there been a continuous decrease in rural phosphate rock quality as reserves of high-grade and high-quality phosphate rock are being depleted? I've heard this for 25, 30 years. Is this true? We're using up all the good stuff. Well, I replotted the data before as far as production in P2O5, and I plotted it in terms of phosphorus, and look at that. We haven't been producing as much rock, but boy, we produced a lot more phosphorus, so that means something. What does it mean? It means that the lowest grade there is in blue. And for a while, the lowest grade took over everything between about 85 and 2000. But now, the second lowest grade, about 31, has steadily risen and risen and risen. No, you know, all the good rock is not gone. There's still lots of good rock. And basically, we're looking at a rock market that's geared towards making phosphoric acid. Phosphate rock has been a relatively low-value bulk commodity. And this sort of changed when we had the 2008 fertilizer spike in prices. I got an airplane that was heading from Mumbai, India, when DAP was $1,200 a ton spiking. And by the time I got to the meeting, 3 or 4 days later, it was selling for somewhere around $400. That was interesting. And what happened when the fertilizer prices went up, the phosphate rock prices went up. This is combined prices for North Africa. And for years and years and years and years, in 85, when I got in this business, you could get North African rock for $50. And we're looking at right at 2007, it was $50 a ton. And then with the price spike, up it went. Went up to $500 some places. Jordan rock went up to $350 or a little more, and then it came back down, and it's sitting over $100 a ton. What were we trying to do with this study? I wanted to do a literature review. I wanted to look at past reserve resource estimates. I wanted to evaluate current phosphate rock mining, beneficiation methods, and recovery. And I wanted to make a preliminary estimate of rural reserves and resources. What did I find? There are very limited sources of information since the early 1990s. And most all this reserve information ended when IGC Project 156 phosphorites ended. It was a global effort. It was supposed to last 10 years. It lasted about 12 years. They published 3 reference books, and they were supposed to publish a 4th on Tethyan phosphates, which never came out. I used a lot of information from websites, trade magazines, conference papers, papers with limited distributions, 10Ks, stock market reports, annual reports. What I found was the reserve and resource terminology was not standardized. This is a very busy slide, but these are some past reserve estimates. Donald Igmig, he worked for Monsanto, and he took real exception to what the Institute of Ecology said, and he came up with 1,200 billion tons of reserves. I'm not so quite so sure of his terminology. Wells worked for the Institute for Future Resources. I believe they're still in Washington. He came up with 530 billion tons of reserves at 30% P2O5. DeVoto and Stevens did a very big study for the U.S. Department of Energy, and this was mostly about uranium. And they estimated 265 billion tons of recoverable product at 30% P2O5. Cathcart was the USGS man that was in charge of the Florida reserves or information down there and contacts, and he was very conservative. He came up with 20 billion tons of reserves at greater than 30% P2O5. Fantel worked for the U.S. Bureau of Mines. And this is one of the greatest studies I've ever seen. They worked on 230 different deposits from around the world, and their estimated recoverable product was 37 billion tons. The culmination of the IGCP work was not Holt, Sheldon, and Davidson, and they didn't give anything in terms of recoverable product, and they came up with 163 billion tons of reserves at 22.5% P2O5. And the USGS in 2009, they said 15 billion tons of reserves. Most of these estimates you see for the peak phosphorus estimates are 15, 16, 17, 18 billion tons of reserves. What I find out about mining beneficiation, P2O5 recovery, mining to be economic has to be large scale. A small phosphate mine is 1.5 to 2 million tons. They get bigger from there. Beneficiation is generally as simple as possible. While the U.S. employed flotation back in the 20s and 30s, many of these places in the Middle East and Africa, they didn't employ this until the last 15 years. Recovery, grade is inversely proportional recovery. Everything these days is geared towards phosphoric acid production. Losses. You go through in mine, you can lose 100% if the bed's too thin, if you can't recover it effectively. Open pit may range from 5 to 50%, underground 15 to 35%. But just looking at these numbers here, you can lose 30 to 80% of the phosphate when you're trying to beneficiate it and make a suitable product to make fertilizer, whatever you're making, with current techniques. In this study, reserves are rock that can be economically produced at the time of the determination to make suitable products, and I reported it as tons of concentrate. I went back through all the literature and searched, and I used various ratios to reduce it to tons of concentrate. Resources are phosphate of any rock that might be produced at some time in the future. These are the USGS rock reserves as published, and what we see is we see a lot of quantum leaps in the data here. If you look at the top there, that's Morocco. They started out with 7 billion tons, and then they just dropped like a rock at the late 80s and wandered along at 5.9, and then there was a little drop, 5.7. There was the meteoric rise here of the Chinese reserves. There was no data on Chinese phosphate rock until about the year 2000. Then all of a sudden they had more phosphate rock than anybody in the world, and then that dropped off precipitously back in about 2008, 2009. What I do want you to notice here is the United States reserves. They just kind of hang right there at 1.2 billion, and there's a reason for that. I use original, most current literature, other sources. I tried to go back to where somebody had actually done some work and drilled some holes and evaluated some real data. I wanted to know if the ore was concentrate or it was ore. I assume 95% recovery on open pit, which might be a little high, but I've never been in a mine where the mine manager didn't tell me he got 95%. I accepted underground recoverable ore estimates, and that can be highly variable. I have applied appropriate ore to concentrate ratios. These are very, very hard to find numbers. How much ore does it take to make 1 ton of concentrate? And then I estimated reserves as product, and then the resources, I just left it in terms of million metric tons of raw materials, the range of grades. It's still in the ground. So here's preliminary what I came up. USGS came up with 16 billion tons of reserves. I came up with 60 billion tons of product. My preliminary resource estimate was 290 billion tons, and that's as raw material. Here's a little more detail. You can see the biggest difference, probably in previous studies, is Morocco. I come up with 51 billion tons. There's four big deposit areas the Moroccans control. One of them, the Mescala area, I didn't even include as reserves. The Russians worked on it about 30, 40 years ago, and they've had made no effort to mine it. I just left it in the resource category. United States still has a lot of reserves. They only prove reserves in the United States for about a 15, 20-year period. They have tremendous legal challenges in the United States these days with respect to mining. There are billions and hundreds of billions of tons of phosphate rock, for instance, in the western United States, in Idaho, Utah. There's probably another Morocco sitting offshore out of North Carolina. There's a lot of reserves in Florida that may never be mined because of legal challenges and the fact that some people in Florida, and that's their prerogative, they don't want any more mining or industrialization in that form. There's a lot of rock in the Middle East. I don't think I've gotten to everything here, and actually I believe this is actually a very conservative estimate. I'm not the only person that said there were this many mineable reserves in Morocco. In the World Survey of Phosphate Deposits, a British Sulfur publication, 1987, they said the identified mineable reserves placed by OCP in 1984 were 56 billion tons. They speculated total resources may approach 140 billion tons, and I think that's a very, very low estimate because as far as I can tell, the Moroccans have not really explored. They've explored less than 50% of their ground. Reserves. If any point I want to make in this talk is reserves are established on technology, potential market price, and cost production. They're established with study and considerable manpower. You have to work through all of this. It takes months and months and months and years sometimes, and teams of mining engineers to figure out if this stuff is economic. Reserves are only established on a planning horizon, 15, 20 years longer for some producers. In the United States, it's 15, 20 years because they may not have rock to mine because of legal challenges. But the point I'd like to make is the reserves are dynamic. They're not a fixed number. There's only so much phosphate rock out there, but reserves are dynamic. We're looking at a world where we're going to have to go deeper mines, mine lower grade ore. There's going to be increased processing costs. In summary, it's a finite non-renewable resource. Maximum recovery, utilization, recycling of phosphate rock, fertilizers, byproducts, and waste should be emphasized. Yes, it is finite. Reserves are dynamic quality. Resources can become reserves when the price of phosphate rock goes up. There is no evidence, as far as I'm concerned, for any peak phosphorus event. Here's another paper that just showed up on my desk last week. It's from Van Buren, Bowman, and Bison. It's printed in Global Environmental Change, and I didn't particularly like some of the assumptions they made, but they used similar numbers as I had, except they were provided by IFA. The best estimates, 25 to 35% of the phosphate rock is going to be depleted in 2100, and the worst case, 40 to 60%. So they don't see a phosphorus peak coming anytime soon either. This needs further analysis. I'm not going to say this study was the end to all studies. We called it a preliminary analysis, and we're going to attempt to have a World Phosphate Rock Reserves and Resource Workshop in 2010. And this is IFDC publication T75, and if you want to read more about this, get this, and you can have all the numbers. Thank you.
Are there any questions? We've got a couple minutes here. If you've got any questions for discussion or anything.
Quick question. There's been a sort of continuing speculation and different patterns of geographical demand?
I think supply and demand is fairly tight yet. And it's the prices have gone up, and a lot of production in the world in the last 10, 15 years has gone down. And I think that there's a couple projects coming on right now, particularly in Peru, where there's going to be some phosphate rock on the market for sale, and then this Aljalamid project, the Saudi project. And when that happens, things may lighten up a little. But I think the overcapacity that was in the world for a long, long time, it's going to be much more tightly watched. And these people, in order for the entire phosphate industry to be sustainable, they're going to have to be profitable. And I think that's going to continue on. I think everybody's going to watch their investments a lot tighter these days. And I think phosphate rock prices are going to go up to that $100 level or a little more. They may stabilize, but I think that's going to be, this is going to be a new level where we're going to be working at. That answer your question? I think as the price of phosphate fertilizer goes up, there'll be more and more incentive. And I don't know where people get this idea, but people have just been throwing it away. They really haven't been throwing it away. They're trying to actually conserve it. Everything, you know, from chicken litter to, you know, recycling sewage waste. And people have been working on this for years and years and years and years. And at least right now, the only way I know that recovering sewage waste can be profitable is if you include tipping fees. And it depends on where you are and what the tipping fees are. And recovering organic matter, this is all worthwhile. But one of the biggest things that really hinders this is usually the products you come up with, they have very, very low analysis. And then it becomes a matter of economics of trucking them to wherever you need them. And what you find out, particularly with sewage sludge and around a large municipality or chicken litter in an area where you produce a lot of chickens, is you saturate the whole area right around where you're doing all the producing, and then all of a sudden you get out so far and then it's not economic anymore. And that's when the fertilizer takes over again, the highest analysis fertilizer.
Okay. Thanks a lot.